This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Welcome to Keeping the Faith. Our guest today is Reverend Koshin Ogwe of the Midwest Buddhist Temple in Chicago. Welcome. You're talking with us by phone. Can you hear us? Hear me all right?
Yes, I do.
Very good. Now, tell me a little bit about how long have you been with the Midwest Buddhist Temple?
This is my 10th year.
But you've been with the Buddhist Churches of America for many years longer than that, I know.
Yeah, over 42 years.
42 years. And did you grow up a Buddhist, or was this something you learned about and converted to?
I was born in a temple, a Buddhist temple in Japan, as son of a Buddhist priest, and came to the United States in 1962 at the age of 22.
And had your family been Buddhist for very long?
This is my 18th generation of Buddhist priesthood, which means stupid enough I keep doing the same thing for 18th generation.
So you come from a very long line of Buddhist priests. Now, 18 generations, how far back does that go?
I don't know exactly years, but 18th generation.
several centuries.
I think so.
That's very impressive. So do you feel the weight of tradition on your shoulders? Is that a heavy burden?
No, not at all.
What makes it pleasant?
No, I don't feel anything's a heavy burden or pressure, but I was challenged to today, how could I share some kind of heart of compassion and wisdom to the people who come to ask about it.
So the challenge you feel carrying on that Buddhist tradition from Japan in this country, in America, and in a large metropolitan city like Chicago, you talk about compassionate wisdom. How do you make that relevant to people of today in this country?
That's quite a challenge, isn't it? Especially today's situations we are in, the war, a conflict of heart of compassion and killing and shootings and so on. So that there are so many people who visit my temple and join or practice the meditations we call Zazen meditations, which surely assist us more harmonious or peaceful mind, the mind which could see things as it is, or straighten up.
So when a Buddhist practices this kind of meditation, what happens to them? How does it affect a person?
I've been seeing more people showing their own settlement or calmness. In a sense, people start taking back their original harmonious mind.
So they're able to make their mind more peaceful, more calm.
I think so. At least they are able to be oneself, or a calmness or settledness. From there, they could see the things more clearly, what's happening in the world, I believe.
Is this type of meditation something that is taught and learned, or is it something that Buddhists, I'm not sure how to say it. Is it a technique?
It's a long tradition, I believe. Someone in the history of Buddhism created such a method of meditation. Or even founder, so-called, Shakyamuni Buddha, 2,500 years ago, 2,500 years ago in India, came to desperations of seeking his answer. And he went into such a deep sitting meditation practice, then found the peaceful mind or harmonized mind, so that he could see what is the cause of such sufferings and illusions and so on. From that tradition, here today we practice the sitting, walking, and sitting, and chanting, and listening my short talk. Those are one program to practice for people.
Could you tell our listeners a little bit of what they'd experience if they came to the Midwest Buddhist Temple in Chicago and came to one of your services? You have a Zen Shin meditation service at 8 in the morning on Sundays. Is that correct?
Right.
What would they experience if they came to that service?
Okay. There are four different types of service. Okay. The one of the service which we are going to talk is Zen Shin meditation, which is offered every Sunday at 8 a.m. When people come, they're all invited to the main hall, and they walk into the hall, and they have a choice. Either use the regular pew, like a church pew, or Christians sit on the floor, and they practice sitting meditations about 10 minutes, and a walking meditation about 10 minutes.
So people actually walk around the room?
After they sit for 10 minutes.
All right.
And they walk around the inside of the main hall about 10 minutes.
Now, do they do that silently or do they speak to one another?
No. Just depends. It's very simple practice in a sense. When we sit, we practice to sit. When we walk, we practice to walk. It kind of sounds very strange, but, most of the time what we get tired is when we are sitting, we are thinking about walking at the same time.
I see.
Well, sometimes when we are walking, we are thinking about sitting. like going away from home for vacations and thinking about home when we are on the vacation and get very tired. Well, when we are at home, we think about vacations, going out for vacations, so it's creating such a frustration.
But people don't meditate when they're lying down because they might fall asleep.
That's right. That's the reason why there is some kind of details. How do they follow? How do they hold the hands, sitting, breathing, and so on, so will be instructed.
So these are guided or instructed meditations?
Yes, there is a leader,
uh-huh.
And I myself, a teacher, saying wisdom, and helping people to calm oneself, settle oneself. Settle oneself, anything special, I don't think anything special. It's as I said, when we walk, we practice to walk. And when we sit, we nothing but simply sitting.
And how long does the walking meditation last, usually at your Zen Shin meditation time?
Yeah, that's 10 minutes.
About 10
minutes sitting, 10 right. minutes walking, uh-huh. 10 minutes sitting again,
uh-huh.
then 10 minutes chanting, to 10 minutes listening, talk.
Could you give us an example of the chant, of the chanting meditation, just a short example?
Okay. Chanting is something practicing to bring inner energy to outside. And taking outer energies inside. It's like a cycling. It's like you sing a song. When you take a shower, you hum. That's help you to create more harmony, harmonizing inner and outer energies alike. Okay? So, shall I show you one verse?
Yes, that would be nice.
Okay, very good. I have Yes, small town. Only one birth. Okay.
We've been listening
well,
to...
Well, that is one example, one verse of chanting.
Thank you. We've been hearing Buddhist chanting from Reverend Koshin Ogui of the Midwest Buddhist Temple in Chicago, an example of the chanting that takes place at the Zen Shin meditation services on Sunday mornings. I want to tell listeners to Keeping the Faith that you can call us today and ask a question to our guest about Buddhism, or make a comment. Anywhere this program can be heard, including on the internet, you may call us at 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455, and that's a toll-free call, of course. In Champaign-Urbana, to keep the other line free, please use a local line, 333-9455, if you have a question or comment for our guest, Reverend Koshin Ogui of the Midwest Buddhist Temple. After that chanting, what else happens at that service, if I may ask?
It's very interesting. I think there are someone who are wise men in the histories of Buddhism, you know, created such a form. Like walking, sitting, and telling us how do we breathe, and how to concentrate on the chantings and so on. And those movements unconsciously assist us to harmonize body and mind, and unconsciously or effortlessly calm ourselves down and settle.
Now, what language were you chanting, or was that a language?
It is a language originated from Sanskrit, which is a very classic language from India, and translated into Chinese. And I'm chanting with the English, I think Japanese version of reading. But the very bottom lines is the main purpose of chanting is to go beyond such a words or logical explanation.
So this is a chant that comes from originally from India, Sanskrit, through Chinese, through Japanese, and taking place now in an American service.
Yes. As for language itself, yes. But this is a sound of the nature, like a wind, or a sound of birds, or a sound of rains, are very much composed into such a way of chanting. So that when we chant It assists us to return to the nature. Mm-hmm. It creates more harmonies and sort of we call oneness with nature.
Now, nature is both good and bad, isn't it? I mean, there's violence in nature as well as beauty. Do Buddhists return to that connection with both sides of nature, both kinds of nature?
There is no both kind of nature, I think, to us. Something beyond good and bad and right and wrong.
So you would be returning to the essence of nature, some part of nature that's beneath the red in tooth and claw part of nature?
Something like, something like, it's hard to explain, but go beyond the dictomatizations or beyond the dualistic way of rationalization.
So the dualistic way would be the Western way to think about it, and this is an Eastern, a different view.
It seems like, yes. But, Church Bell, for example, St. Michael's Catholic Church is located behind us.
Yes.
And their church bells, to me, echo into my heart and assist my mind to open. And go beyond such forms and sounds and possibly get in touch of something beyond. Some people might call it infinite sense of love, love of God, whatever you call it. Something go beyond don't need such identity.
I want to get back to that interesting distinction, but we have a caller waiting on our toll-free line.
Sure. Let's
go to line number 4. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guest, Reverend Koshin Ogui. Go ahead, please.
Hello. I understand that in Japan, many people practice both Shinto and Buddhism, and I think to most Americans that would seem kind of strange that one person would practice two separate like that.
That's right.
Maybe you could talk about that a little bit, and I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
That's a good point. There is no strangeness at all in Japan, you know. I might say 90% of the Japanese family has Shinto shrines in the main place of the house. Okay? Shinto is domestic religions which started in Japan, worshipping the gods. Not only single gods, but God in any spirit, in any forms, any place, are worshipped. That is called Shinto, or Shintoism. And Buddhist teachings, Buddhism came from, brought from India through the Asian country and through China and Korea to Japan. Very much practiced together. And they have Buddhist family shrines, and at the same time, Shinto shrines, slightly above the closer to the seating area, they place the Shinto shrine. And both are harmoniously practiced together. As listener questions about the strange to the Westerners, but it's not strange to the Easterners or Japanese.
Now, you were saying that in response to that question from our caller, that in the Shinto shrine there would be many forms of God. Does Buddhism have a divinity? Does Buddhism have a sense that there's one God or many gods like Hinduism or not?
Buddhism, we do not have creator. God as creator, or God as almighty, you know, destines our lives and so on. The Buddhism rather think things are moving, changing and becoming according to the law of causation. You know, that is a sort of scientific way of thinking. There's a cause, condition, and effect. Streams of, we call, law of causation. Shinto have such Holy Spirit gods and so on, but not only single, one god. Shinto practice, 64,000 gods exist in our universe and so on, so that, show the respect or worship and so on. The bottom line is, though, practice of Shinto is a practice of creation of respecting all the phenomena, all the existence of this universe.
We have another caller waiting, and before I go to that call, let me remind other listeners that we're talking today on Keeping the Faith with Reverend Koshin Ogwe, who is from the Midwest Buddhist Temple in Chicago. And if you'd like to call and ask a question or make a comment about Zen and Pure Land School Buddhism, our topic for discussion today, you may call us toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. And in Champaign-Urbana, where the program originates at the University of Illinois, you may call us on a local line, 333-9455. And let's go to line one for another question or comment. Go ahead, please. You're on Keeping the Faith.
Hi, this is Jan Shepherdson. I have a comment. I love the concept of passionate wisdom, and I want him to expand upon that. But here are my questions. In this Western culture, we're into killing and we're so busy. And I agree that the sounds of nature are very nice to hear, the wind and the birds and the rain, and keeping your mind open and being in harmony. I just want to hear your speaker, your guest, comment on those concepts, and I'll hang up and listen off the air. And thank you for this. I've learned so much. I'm learning. Thank you.
That's a very humble question. It is. I didn't think much, but since I started living in this country over 40 years, I start realizing that such these separations of the with the natures and so on in Buddhist traditions, doesn't have to call it the Buddhist tradition, but even Shinto, any religions which started from India areas are always emphasis of practice to go along with the nature, or realization of living in the nature, so that in contrast with the some of the cultures which emphasize occupying or control the nature, shows some unique differences. To me, whatever I struggle, whatever I say, something intellectual things, I always realize that I'm living with this great movement of the nature, or law of the nature. My power is very small in contrast with such great nature.
And the caller also was impressed by the Buddhist concept of having a heart of compassionate wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Islam, Muslims also talk about God as, or Allah as being compassionate. And of course, in Christianity, there's the notion of a loving God. Mm-hmm. What does compassionate wisdom mean for Buddhism?
Mm-hmm. Compassion without wisdom does not make much sense. And wisdom without compassion does not make much sense. The practice of both sides, heart of compassion and power of wisdom, should be practiced at the same time. It's like a front and back of the hands, or palms like. And compassion side might say, yes, 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 yes. But wisdom side said, no. It used to be explaining to relationship of the father and mother, but today has been changed, so that it's maybe hard to understand it, but let me try it.
Because we don't always have ideal fathers or mothers, do we?
In my case, I was a, yes. My mother was much easier to lie. I could buy books, or could you send me the money and so on when I was a student. And knowing that I'm lying, that she sent me some money. But my father was saying, no, you're lying. Hmm. You bought the books already 2 months ago. This kind of stuff. So here I smile myself, both sides of approach, yes and no. A heart of compassion and the power of wisdom. Keep up, wisdom side, keep up more coolness. And here, compassion side is warm, you know. But here, practice of, among the human beings, it's already conditional. You know, even we say compassion or love, it's always based on conditional love and compassion. But here, what we are aiming to, that's the aim, which is not the very conclusion. Aiming to is unconditional, you know, sense of compassion. And the wisdom is possible to be created from empty mind. Empty mind means free mind, freed mind, you know. Or learning and practicing of teachings, the power of wisdom very gradually, gently created within one's life.
Wisdom from an empty mind. I'll have to think about that. No, no, I can't think about it. We have two more callers waiting. Let's go to line one. You're on Keeping the Faith with Reverend Koshin Ogwe from the Midwest Buddhist Temple of Chicago. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Reverend. I would like to know if you can remember your past lives or know of people that can.
Past life, you said?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
Can you remember your past life, or do you know other people who can remember their past lives?
To me, yes, yes, yes. I could tell you all kind of stories and make it more mystic. But Buddhist wisdom do not agree with that type of approach. And simply saying, past and future, your life before and after, does not make sense without present life, without this life. So here comes back to present moment. So, how are you? How are you taking care of yourself here and now as you are? It's very much emphasize the point. Of course, there are so many people ask me, you know, after life, but not many people ask me before life.
Present life, yes.
That is interesting. So to me, it may be because of influence from Buddhist practice or teachings for 40 years, something comes to my mind is, so here and now as I am, past and future, before and after life does not make sense without this life. But this life is unrepeatable with same condition. And I don't have to wait until I become a better person, but as I am, here, not there, here and now, as I am, how am I taking care of this life, the life of eternity? You know, in the Buddhist way of thinking, it's always emphasized eternal moment. The eternity is not separated from this moment. Today is the day of yesterday, and day to tomorrow, and day of eternity. So, absolute day, absolute moment, absolute person. How are you doing with this absoluteness? You know, this kind of things come into my life.
Caller, did you want to follow up with that?
Nope, I'll accept that. Thank you.
Thank you. And let's go to line two for another question or comment for Reverend Koshin Ogwe. Go right ahead.
Hello.
Yes.
My name is Mike. I have really enjoyed listening to this show. This is a very enlightening discussion.
Thank you.
I actually live in Tokyo, and I'm calling from Tokyo.
Oh.
And I'm listening to your program over the internet.
What a day today, isn't it?
Yeah. Indeed. This is kind of straying from the last subject you spoke on, but having lived and worked in Japan for about 5 years, I have, of course, witnessed what it's like to live in a society that has two religions. I'm sort of going back to one of the questions that an earlier caller was asking. It seems to me, having grown up in a Christian environment, that the role of Christianity, especially in the United States, is more of, well, with many world religions, it seems to be to live your life in order to carry out God's will. Mm-hmm. And this doesn't really seem to be present in either Buddhism or Shintoism, which is what I think makes it possible to have this dual religion in a society like this. But I'm wondering, was there a point in Japanese history when religion played more of a spiritual role, more of a sort of defining God's will kind of a role in Japanese society?
Mm. Yes, early in the history of the Buddhism, that Buddhism was brought to Japan in six centuries. The priests who bet their life to practice and learn the Buddha, we call Buddha Dharma, from Korea and China, you know, brought back the knowledge of the Buddha Dharma. At the same time, a more practical practice, like making a bridge or farming or, let's see, making green teas and so on to assist the peoples, you know, at the same time. Those early time, I think Buddhist teaching was very much practiced and alive among those common people. But here today in Japan, it has become more remains of practice of ritual instead of contents of Buddhist teaching. Especially, though, after World War II, you know that? I was 4 years old when war was over, so that I am a good example how I been received education after the World War II. You know, General MacArthur was like emperor, very respected. And his way of organizing Japan and controlling Japan was, I think, very smart way. He knew how he controlled emperors and so on. But at the same time, though, Japan, as you could be witness, has been grown into economical business field in such limited time and very much lost the spiritual values or religious values and so on. That you have been seeing, we could see today, very strange, unbelievable incident and happenings among young generations and people. So that the value of the life, human's life, has been very much, I think, lost.
And Mike, since you're calling from Japan, if you want to follow up, please do. But I know you're paying for this call, so go right ahead.
Well, actually, the calls are routed through the Internet, just like the streaming radio, so it's become quite cheap and possible, and we're living in a smaller world. But
how nice.
Anyway, yes, well, anyway, I'm actually from Champaign, so I just wanted to keep in touch. But anyway, thank you very much. That was very enlightening. I plan to keep learning about this subject as I live and work in Japan. But anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you
for the call. I might explain to other listeners that our toll-free line is useful anywhere in this country, but people who are listening to this program on the Internet do have to call in another way.
It's amazing, the such a listeners that you have.
Yes.
I didn't expect there such a response.
I was a little surprised. We have another call waiting.
The world is not bad, isn't it?
That's right. It was a very good connection. We have another caller waiting, but since we're about halfway through our program today, let me reintroduce our guest. We're talking with Reverend Koshin Ogwe, who is in his 42nd year as part of the Buddhist Churches of America. He is with the Midwest Buddhist Temple in Chicago that's located at 435 West Menomonee Street in Chicago. And if people would like to call in to this program to ask him a question, please call us toll-free 1-800-222-9455 or in Champaign-Urbana 333-9455. My name is Steve Shoemaker, and I'm the usual host for this program. Let me take just a moment here on AM 580 WILL to tell you who will be our guests in upcoming programs on Keeping the Faith. Next week on Sunday, April 6th at 5 o'clock Central Time, we'll be talking about Handel's Messiah that will be being performed at the university here in a little while. We'll be talking with Pastor Roger Diggs and conductor Chet Alwis. On April 13, we'll be talking about the Whirlwind Project with an interfaith dialogue with representatives from Judaism, Islam, and again, Buddhism. On April 20, we'll be talking with Rabbi Norman Klein about standing with Israel, American Jews who choose to stand with Israel. On April 27, with Monsignor Stuart Swetland, about just wages, a very interesting ethical topic. And on May 4th, we'll be talking with Reverend Dr. Jesse Davis, who was a partner working with Martin Luther King for civil rights in the United States. So we'll be talking with Reverend Jesse Davis on May 4th. Support for these Keeping the Faith programs comes in part from the University YMCA at the University of Illinois, where I'm the executive director. The Y is the oldest religious organization at the university. It was started 130 years ago on this campus and helps develop student leaders by providing opportunities for social action and community service. And just this weekend, we had about 16 different groups come back of almost 200 students who are out doing spring break service projects. So we're very happy about that. A couple programs at the Y this week will have a comedy troupe on April 1st. This is not an April 1st April Fool's joke, but at noon at the Y, at Know Your University, we'll be having the Gaspar Project Improv Comedy Troupe. It's now in its third year at the University of Illinois, and they'll be presenting some very topical comedy. And then Friday Forum starts up again April 4th, continuing our program on promoting conflict resolution and sustainable development, asking the question, can democracy provide solutions? And also coming up this week on Focus 580 are a couple programs that people who listen to this program would want to particularly look for. At 10 o'clock on Thursday, David Inge will be talking about On Being a Muslim, Finding a Religious Path in the World Today. And on Friday at 11 o'clock, he'll be talking with local author Beth Finke about her new book, published by University of Illinois Press, Long Time No See, about her personal struggles with blindness and other very interesting events in her life. So that's Friday at 11. Well, let's get back to our guest today on Keeping the Faith, Koshin Ogwe from the Midwest Buddhist Temple, and we have a caller waiting on line one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead.
Hi there. This is Jim Seacrest.
Yes.
I have a question for Koshin Ogwe.
Sure.
I'm interested in the central philosophical tenets of Buddhism. I wonder if you could touch briefly on the Four Noble Truths of Buddhism and talk about how that ties in to this practice of meditation that Westerners are so aware of relating to Buddhism. And I'll just hang up and listen.
Of course, you could study at the library and you could ask more scholars to explain about it. But let me share with my limited way of knowledge. You know, I'm a simple practitioner, okay, practicing Buddha Dharma in my living life. Meeting with the peoples and laughing and crying together and realizing how stupid we are. Sometimes we so rejoice how smart we are. Okay? Then here, a scholar after Shakyamuni Buddha died, organized, okay, along with the senior leaders, senior monks, to keep it for later age and so on. And organize, as he, Jim mentioned that, Four Noble Truths, like a noble truth of suffering. The old age, birth itself is a cause of suffering. If you're not born, you don't have to suffer from anything, okay? The birth and becoming old age and sickness, no one wants to suffer from sickness. And death, the reality that life is full of suffering, you know. Then the second cause, or second of truth, is cause of suffering, craving, desires, attachment, you know. I don't want to get old age. Isn't that nice? Whether you're Christian or Buddhist or Hindu or Muslim or atheist, okay, there is no differences. We all get age and disappear from this world, you know, which means that we all die. Okay? But don't want to die. Don't want to think about dying, even. Those craving, desire, all kind of attachment with our ignorance, okay, creating more cause of suffering. Okay? And third noble truth is cessation of the cause of suffering, transformation of suffering. You know, there is a transformation of ignorance into understanding and awareness and enlightenment. This is a very interesting, very unique part of the Buddhist religions. Transform. That takes a time, but like sadness, for example, cannot say bad. We commonly say sadness is bad, sickness is bad. But in Buddhist way of thinking of totality or wholeness, might say so. A person who never experienced sadness never know the joy of life. A person who never experienced sickness never know the joy of health. So sickness and sadness is also equally, you know, impact on life. You know, those type of awareness is emphasized as practice. So transformations, transform instead of destroying it. Okay? Transform energy from so-called suffering into power of understanding, awareness, and realization, even it become appreciations, you know, which is ridiculous, but I have been a witness. Some people say, because of this terminal cancer, I truly realize the significance of life. So, cancer is great impact to me. That I'm talking from my experience, okay? I'm not lying. As a Buddhist minister who are working among the people. And the fourth noble truth is that, well, you might need some kind of way to follow it to overcome such ignorance or transform the power. Then it was kind enough to show eightfold noble path. There's eightfold noble path to follow it. Okay? It said right view, right thoughts, right speech, right conduct, right livelihood, right mindfulness, right wisdom, right meditation. Those are, you know, organized by a scholar to follow it, which is called Eightfold Noble Path. But here, right view is very interesting part, not right or wrong view. This right view is absolute view, which means you are not either good nor bad, nor right nor wrong, but your life exists only one in this entire universe, which is very absolute. That is absolute view. Then thoughts, speech, conduct, livelihood, mindfulness, wisdom, and meditation will follow. So right view is very important, to see the things as it is. I don't know whether I explained to you enough or not.
That's very helpful. Since you've been kind enough to share from your own experience, let me follow up on that caller's question about the basic philosophy of Buddhism, the basic beliefs and practices that you've shared with us. Let me ask one specific question about when you have a sadness or a tragedy in your own life, a friend dies, a family member dies, or is very ill. How do you personally, when you meditate, do you think about the grief you feel, the unhappiness you feel, the sadness, or do you only think of the positive things in that person's life?
Let's see. When I walk into
hospital, someone who are facing to death. Okay? My experience will surely help me out. How do I approach? What should I say yet? Shouldn't I say yet? The most of the time, I do not say anything. I just walk in and shake hands. Then his or her energies transform into myself that I feel are more or less same or similar situations. Sometimes I have tears on my eyes without saying anything. But very real communications shared there.
So real empathy.
Yes. There's sometimes, depend on the persons. Okay, most of the time, the people who have been spiritually, what you call, matured, ready to understand or accept, I just simply say, I heard you're dying by terminal cancer. That's a credit or privilege of the, I think, clergy. I could say right away, you are dying by terminal cancer. So how are you?
You can speak the truth.
Yes. How are you facing to this, the fact of life? And then I might visit several times, depend on the person again, okay? And bring it to the more deeper spiritual realizations, coming into more appreciation towards, you know, people around him or around her. At the end, not ending, but coming to the dying or death, people become even, you know, expressing the gratefulness to be associated with you as my wife, you as my husband, you as my son. You know, you're a bad son, but so I learned from you. You know, they cried each other. So there, I commonly tell the truth. Or sometimes I have to say there is a person who don't want to go into that area, but very insecure, but needs some kind of certainty. I might say, okay, you'll be surely born in the Pure Land. If you say even Pure Land or heavens, if you recite this word.
We're talking today on Keeping the Faith with a representative from the Midwest Buddhist Temple, Reverend Koshin Ogui. We're talking about Zen and Pure Land School Buddhism. If you have a question or comment, we can probably sneak in one or two more quick questions before the end of the program. You may call us toll-free 1-800-222-9455 or in Champaign-Urbana 333-9455.
Before you close, give me at least 1 minute.
Of course.
Something I'd like to share.
Yes, please do.
Okay.
Go right ahead now.
Oh, now?
Yes, now would be a good time.
Okay. To me, any religions, including Buddhist religions, doesn't matter Zen or Pure Land School, okay, is like finger which is pointing the beauty of the moon. If anyone stuck on the finger, not able to see the beauty of the moon. All the rituals, the doctrines and practice, like meditations, you know, those, a bunch of practice are like a finger which is showing directions. But those are finger, form, ritual. Someone made it up so that we have to go through the form. And more important thing is to go beyond form, which means beyond finger, which is showing direction. When we go through the finger and see the beauty of the moon, we are very contented and able to say, wow, that's beautiful. When you share with others, others also feel comfortable and appreciate it. Say, wow, it is beautiful. But we have to be careful. Most of the people, so-called religious, fanatic people are stuck around the finger. Stuck around the finger means stuck around forms and rituals and doctrines. Okay? They become very uncertain and insecure. So that they have to force oneself to believe, blindly believe something, and yet insecure. So that they have to force others to believe the same way. If they don't believe, they have to judge as they are evils and they are going to hell and so on.
those kind of stupid way of thinking will be practiced. So that those stuck around the finger go through the finger and see the beauty of the moon.
But are there religions that are pointing the wrong direction, where the finger is pointing not at the beautiful moon, but it is pointing at something ugly? I don't know what a meteorite that's going to blow up part of the world or something.
Yeah, that's very. Again, and we have to be careful. I think 100,000 fingers, okay, on this planet pointing the beauty of the moon. But our ego-centered, or egoistic attachments are very strong. So that we have to learn how do we handle this ego power. When we end up with the ego powers and self-centeredness, and furthermore blindness, okay, ignorance, and blindly believe this is a practice of religions, then if I do this, I will be born in heaven next time because I offer my life for justice. Those kind of dangerous portions that all religion has it. So you have to keep your head cool and feet warm.
There's a question I'm sure you've been asked a lot recently, as leaders of many religious groups have been asked, and that's what is the Buddhist teaching about war?
Yeah, that's right. No question about it. Okay, Buddhist religion is one of the religions which emphasize the values and dignity of life. Life itself does not make any differences, enemy or friends, man and woman, rich or poor, or Christian or Buddhist or Hindu. Life itself has to be respected. From that point of view, war is something that has to be stopped. Sorry to say it. Each one's opinion is respected, but by my opinion as religious leaders is like that. And especially the one who experienced the war in Japan, okay, experience of atomic bomb at Hiroshima and Nagasaki,
yes.
I have to speak up for harmony and peace and dignity of life itself. People here in America, they don't know what is a war like. Most of the people think that is a game like. But it's not. It's really a matter of birth and death, killing the life.
Now,
you know that? So as have the family has to worry about their own fathers who are in the world, or mother in the world, you know?
Yes.
I'm sorry that I get excited for that area.
No, I understand. Is the part of Buddhism that deals with this issue of war and peace the part in the Eightfold Noble Path that deals with right behavior? Are there ethical teachings in Buddhism about peace and war?
You know, in the Buddhist way of thinking, life itself so understood and accepted. First of all, it's very difficult to be born as a human being, are very well explained. Okay? And to be born as a human being is such a credit, because we have a chance to guide our life into the awareness and realizations and so on, and to the higher level. And life itself is respected, born with, we call Buddha nature to become Buddha. That's a unique difference with other religions, I think. Okay? We believe that we are born with Buddha nature. Even the person you hate is living with Buddha nature to become Buddha, enlightened one. Have to be respected. I may not like you, and you may not like me, but I cannot deny to respect your Buddha nature to become enlightened one. Now, those are very much basically practiced. I think in any religions practice the dignities and life of human beings and love of almighties and so on. But sometimes, most of the time, we human beings with ignorance twist the things around. We have to be careful about that.
We have just a couple minutes left, but can you say something about an important term in Buddhism, Dharma? Could you tell us a little bit about Dharma?
Okay. Any group which they like to call it a Buddhist group and so on, okay, has a form. It's a form. The most difficult question to me is, are you a Buddhist? You know, more I learn to practice the Buddhist teaching, more I become free from such names, and I'm becoming more simple human being than I could realize it. Okay? But so-called Buddhist group, they have a respect and practice of three treasures, which is called Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. Those are called three treasures. In Buddha, B-U-D-D-H-A, there are three significance meanings. First one is historical Buddha who was born in India. And second one is Buddha as a means of Buddha nature, nature to be enlightened. And third one is Buddha as infinite sense of love and compassion. Okay? And the center of three treasure, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, is Dharma, which could be translated into English as things as it is, or universal truth, suchness and isness. And that is a very interesting part of challenging to realize. A Sangha is the people who are seeking the meaning of life and seeking enlightenment is called Sangha. Okay? So Dharma is the center. To stop my talking, I was once serious. I'm not serious anymore after I passed 55 years old. But I don't want to try to lose my sincerity. But I was once serious. I kept asking, what is Dharma? Then my master gave me a chance to take his letter to his friend who lived in the next village. It was a rainy day. When I came back, I was so proud that I was asked by my master, knowing that I was recognized as a good student. With that mind, I came back to the temple, and he was standing at the main entrance. That is unusual. He always stay in the way back in the main hall. But he was standing at the entrance of the monastic temple or practice place. He came to me and grabbed me right away, grabbed my neck, and said, "Hey, what did you realize?" I didn't realize anything. I was soaking wet, so I wanted to change my clothes, and I was so proud of what I was asked by my master. Okay? Then he said, "You seems you got wet." I said, "Yes, sir." "You know that? When we walk in the rain, we all get wet."
Well, I think that's a perfect place to end our program today with you, with that wonderful Buddhist story from your own experience. I want to thank our guest for being on Keeping the Faith today, Reverend Koshin Ogwe of the Midwest Buddhist Temple. We've been talking about Zen and Pure Land School Buddhism, and I want to thank our callers for their excellent questions. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm your host for Keeping the Faith, and next week we'll be talking about Handel's Messiah.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
What's the best way to get someone to talk? NPR's Terry Gross has done more interviews than just about anyone else in public radio, but she prefers to talk to them long distance, with no eye contact. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, Terry Gross on The Art of the Interview. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana. AM 580 has a listener comment line. If you'd like to comment on something you hear on the Information Advantage, call 217-333-0853 and leave a message. That's 217-333-0853. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, mostly clear with a low in the mid-40s and southwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour, becoming northwest late. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a high around 60 degrees and north winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly clear with widespread frost after midnight, the low around 30 degrees with north winds around 10 miles per hour in the evening, becoming light after midnight. This is WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois. 580 on your AM dial and on the internet at WILL.UIUC.edu. It's 6 p.m. Central.